Welcome, Red Sox fans. Here are the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome, everyone. The Bastards are back for this early week edition of the podcast. We are brought to you in part by the Minute Media Podcast Network. The Red Sox just wrapped up a four-game set against the New York Yankees, winning the series 3-1. They are currently one game ahead of the second-place Tampa Bay Rays. As always, a quick disclaimer for any first-time listeners. This is not a homer podcast. We call it how we see it. When the Red Sox are dominating, we will celebrate that. When they are getting destroyed, we will be critical and at times savagely blunt. If you are easily offended, press the stop button immediately. But for those who embrace it, let's get rolling. I am Terry Cushman coming to you from Lewiston, Maine. You can harass me on Twitter at CushmanMLB. You can also find the podcast account at Bastards_Boston. Joining us tonight from the city of Westwood, Massachusetts, Jason Kelly. Jason, how are you?
I'm good. I'm doing better than Giancarlo Stanton anytime he steps in the batter's box. Oh my God. That guy doesn't know how to play baseball anymore. It's unbelievable. And I reminded Yankees fans, I'm like, it's okay. Only 8 more years of him. Only 8. It's okay. It'll go by like a flash.
That's what it is. 8 years? Something like that?
Oh, yeah. He's signed through 2029. Yeah.
Oh, I figured it was at least 6 or 7. But, yeah, Stanton's got to be hating life. Boone has to be hating life. Cashman, it's a brutal time to be in New York. Yep. Also joining us tonight from the city of Providence, Rhode Island, Charlie Smith. Charlie, how are you?
I'm doing great. This isn't me putting up a high five. This is me calling 5 straight series in a row. That means that Andrew and Terry were the negative Nancys last episode, and I said the Red Sox were going to win 3, baby. And it took until the bottom of the 8th inning today for me to be right. So I am feeling real damn fine. We made 2 games in this division and we're just, one game ahead in first place, which is, it's going to be tough coming up because the Yankees have a nice little, an easy streak series coming up for them. So we'll see.
I copped out and just picked a split. I figured that was the safe pick. And
Hey man, I went long shot. I was like, you know what? I think they could do 3. The only 2 that I got wrong was the Garrett Cole and game 3. Those are the 2 that I flip-flopped.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
I should start gambling like Joe, man. I'd start making stupid money.
So, Charlie, your Twitter handle for anyone to harass you or any creepy females want to stalk you or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it's been super fun. I've gotten all sorts of stupid shit the last week. It's been great. So it's Smith_MLB. Smith_MLB.
And Jason, as always, I skipped over you. What is your Twitter handle?
Yeah, mine is at Color of the Iris. You'll see me with my nice long hair. It's hard to miss me. So go ahead and yell at me for disparaging the Yankees all year long, because that's what I've been doing. So
there you go. Before we get going on the series, I have to tell you about our sponsor, Manscaped. Summer is here. Are you ready to unveil your beach bod? You are in luck. Our friends at Manscaped just launched their 4th generation performance package, which includes the Lawnmower 4.0. Not kidding, Jason. The Lawnmower 4.0.
Nice.
Complement your summer bod with a trim from the leaders in male grooming. The sun is shining and calling your name, fellas. Join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get ready for that hot guy summer by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20. Manscaped will even throw in two free gifts to their Performance Package 4.0. Those are the Manscaped Boxers and the Shed Travel Bag. Bring your comfort and boxers to another level. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. That's again 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. Escape the shrubs and weeds this summer and shine with Manscaped. Fun fact, our audience is only 13% female, so according to the metrics on
well,
some of
maybe
the sites.
Maybe if more of our listeners use Manscaped, then that number will go up.
Yeah.
Get on it, guys. Come on.
Absolutely. So just to kind of set the tone here, it was a 4-game set. We did win 3 out of the 4, like Charlie brilliantly predicted. I do want to say, despite it being a very successful series, especially considering last weekend dropping essentially 2 out of 3, this was a roller coaster. This whole weekend was a roller coaster. Thursday, we steal it from them. Friday, we beat them straight up. That was the Garrett Cole start, so go figure. Then on Saturday, they steal one from us after Evoldi's brilliant performance. And then today, in the 8th inning, we steal it back from them by putting up 5 runs to make it 5-4, and that was the final. So, thoughts on how the weekend went?
It was more of a pulse pounder than I thought it would be. Going up against the Yankees, like, these Yankee series don't have the same spice that they used to, because the Yankees are just kind of a joke right now, especially when you look at their lineup that they're trotting out. I mean, even today, they just got Gio Urshela back today. They still don't have Aaron Judge. You know, Giancarlo Stanton looks like a joke in the batter's box. DJ LeMahieu he's producing, but he's not being DJ LeMahieu. He's not, you know, he's hitting in the 260s still. And their pitching's been good, maybe better than expected, but they're still underperforming. So I looked at the series going, you know what, like, I hope they at least win 3 out of 4, because this Yankees team just isn't good. They're not going anywhere. Like, and you know what, they're the Yankees. They're going to make acquisitions at the deadline. We all know they will, but they're still not good. And I kind of went in going, you know what, like, if we split the series, I'll be okay. If we lose 3 out of 4, I'll be pissed. Like, that's kind of the way it's going with this team. It's like, when you go up against the Yankees, you shouldn't lose a series. If you split, okay, maybe something went hinky, one of those games, whatever. I'm glad they were able to salvage 3 out of 4, but it's, I don't know, it was kind of a little more little closer than I wanted it to be.
So I'm just going to say Hinkie's a new one. That's not my favorite one that Jason comes up with. Throws up on your shoes is my favorite Jasonism. I look pretty good when the light hits me right, and I make some pretty damn good calls, at least the last 5 series. The 2 games that should really let you know just how bad New York is. Tanner Houck, I think, is underrated. I think he's one of the better pitchers, like, up and coming, and I think he's going to be someone that other teams need to keep an eye on. You got clapped by a kid who didn't even throw 5 innings, hasn't really had that much major league experience. And then in game 2, when arguably your supposedly, like, number 2-3 starter goes down after 1 inning because of a really bad migraine, y'all just got clapped by a guy who literally had the same number of strikeouts all last month. And if you 7 strikeouts in 3 innings for Phillips Valdez. This guy's he's nobody. And he just clapped you guys. Like, there's an expression being used by the kids these days. Talk to me nice. Yankees have to show some major respect now, because Boston just showed them who their daddy was. And it wasn't even close. It wasn't even close. Like, that one game got out of hand only at the end, because it was almost over. And then it was just like, we couldn't get that last out, and everything was smooth sailing. Guess what? Same shit happened today, where We were getting no hit. We were getting no hit. And y'all still got clapped. So what, like, what can you possibly say? This series, if this doesn't put it in perspective, I don't think there's any question. If you're a Yankees fan and you think that your team is better than Boston, you got some really good stuff that you're smoking. I hope you share it with your pals because you guys are going to be needing it for the rest of the season. And Giancarlo Stanton for 8 more years? Holy crap, that hurts so bad. So bad.
The Yankees at this very moment, which for us is Sunday night, are 3.5 games out of the wild card. So in Brian Cashman's mind, he might be able to catch up, he could think. And the Yankees did play a couple of wild card games in years past. 2017 was one of those years. 2018 as well, actually. They played Oakland back-to-back in those years. So I don't think they're afraid of the wild card, but if they're going to be a bona fide contender, they need one starting pitcher minimum, one bullpen arm minimum, and probably a couple of bats. That's four pieces to get serious here. I haven't seen any updates on Luis Severino, but he could be back. Corey Kluber could be back, but what are you getting out of those two? So, and then the Red Sox, we'll get into it, but it was certainly a fun series, a lot of interesting dynamics. So into studs and duds we go. Jason, your stud for the series.
Yeah, he's been my stud before, and I'm going with him again. It's Nathan Eovaldi. Once again, just proving that he truly is the ace of this rotation. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. 7 2/3, 8 strikeouts. He was dominant. Quite frankly, I think Cora should have let him face Stanton in that inning. I think that might have been the downfall of that game. But it happens. You know, it's unfortunately, it was a great start by him that kind of got wasted. The bullpen came in at the end and gave it up. Ottavino was a mess. We'll get into him later. But Nathan Eovaldi is just, I said it before, the guy's a badass. He goes in there against, you know, and he was at home this time, so a little more comfort there. But he's going up against the Yankees. I don't care how bad the Yankees are, and they are bad this year. That's still a big game. And we all know it's a big game, especially with where the Red Sox are. It's not like they've got the division sealed up by, you know, 6-7 games or anything. They're in a tight race. They're in a dogfight with the Rays. And the Blue Jays are up and coming, and the Yankees won't go away. Like, as bad as they are, they're not going to go away. They're going to add at the deadline. They're going to be around. They're going to keep fighting. So this was a big weekend. And Nathan Eovaldi went in there and pitched brilliantly. I mean, the amount of strikes he threw, like, he was just pounding the zone. I think it was, yeah, he threw 100 pitches. 82 of them were strikes. I mean, that's unbelievable for a guy like him who, it's what, fastball, breaking ball? Like, and granted, he's got a slider. He's got a curveball. You know, it's not like he's Tanner Houck. He's not a two-pitch pitcher. But for him to throw that high percentage of strikes against that kind of lineup and have that kind of success, it's been unbelievable. And I'm just so impressed with the fact that he stayed healthy. He's been consistent pretty much all year. I don't think he's maybe had a few, like, rough starts here and there, but he's never had, like, a real blowout as far as I remember. He's been your ace. As much as people, like, are getting excited about Chris Sale starting, you know, games for AA Portland and all that, it's like, I don't know. I'm good with Chris Sale taking his time because Nathan Eovaldi's doing his job. He's at the front of your rotation, and he's being your ace right now. So if the Red Sox were to go into a playoff series, I would be totally confident with Nathan Eovaldi starting game one. I really would. And that's not a statement I thought I'd be making going into this season in spring training, certainly not last year. But right now, yeah, I feel confident. If he's starting game one of a playoff series, I feel good. That's how good he is.
So Nate Eovaldi's 4 lines against New York this year, 6 innings, a run on 2, 1 earned run, 8 hits, 6 innings, 7 strikeouts. He got the win. 1 run, 7 hits, 7 2/3, 6 strikeouts. The only run was on a home run. He got the win. 1 run on 2 hits in 5 innings, 7 strikeouts. No decision. two runs, seven hits, seven and two thirds, eight strikeouts, no decision. There is absolutely no reason why Nate Eovaldi should not be 4-0 against New York, a former team of his. He has absolutely, unequivocally owned the New York Yankees in 2021. And this was arguably his second best start against New York just this year. Every single time I feel that someone says, oh, well, he's going to throw a gopher game, I'm like, well, it's New York, so no. Three of his last five starts are against New York. Three of his last five starts, he's gone seven innings or more. One of the biggest things that I keep bitching about, because we don't have starters that can go six innings. And Nate Eovaldi's having one of those classic hold my beer moments. I'll give you seven. So you can't say he's not your ace right now. And even when Chris Sale comes back, he's going to have to work his way to becoming the ace that Nate Eovaldi has so eloquently become. Like, there is, he's just doing better and better as the months go on. His ERA continues to drop from May on, 4.5, 3.0, 2.84, and he's getting the job done. He's doing what he needs to do, not allowing a lot of runs, going deep into games. He's giving his team an opportunity to do damage. He's 9-5 this year. He's arguably a pitcher that could probably have 12 or 13 wins. He's just not getting the support. So, I mean, solid stud. Solid.
I agree with Jason in that Alex Cora should have let him face Stanton again. To start that inning, that kid from AAA, Esteban Florial, I guess, led off with a double. And then with two outs, he just needed to seal the deal with Brett Gardner. And Gardner was able to grind out an at-bat and then, you know, get a base hit. And the thing about Stanton is, in that game, he had struck out twice swinging and had a fly ball out. So he hadn't gotten on base yet against Eovaldi. And maybe Cora felt like Eovaldi was slipping and tiring. You know, it was the eighth inning. But Giancarlo Stanton isn't going to grind out an at-bat like Brett Gardner is going to. Gardner's going to extend that at-bat 8 or 10 pitches. And we've got a couple of guys on the Red Sox that can do that. Kike Hernandez, for instance. Christian Vasquez, really good at that. Alex Verdugo, really good at that. So I definitely think he should have faced Stanton and probably get out of the inning. But go ahead, Charlie.
So Giancarlo Stanton this year against Boston is 6-41 with one extra base hit, two RBIs, and 19 strikeouts. Giancarlo Stanton against Tampa Bay, ready? 6-41, a double, two homers, five RBIs, 19 strikeouts. He has 38 strikeouts in 42 at-bats against the only two teams with merit against him. Is this really the guy that you are going to be super excited and pumped about for the next 8 years? Jason hit it on the head. This is going to be brutal. Like, it's going to be painful.
If you're a Yankees fan. One of the worst trades ever. You know, it was his MVP year. And Judge probably should have won the MVP on the American League side. He lost it to Altuve, who may or may not have won it in the most ethical way possible. But terrible trade. But getting back to Eovaldi, I think we're about at the time where you can start to kind of have one eye on the postseason in terms of scenarios and whatnot. And I was looking at his stats against playoff contenders before we came on. I was hoping to find some really sparkling numbers, and it's kind of mixed. Against Tampa, in his start against them, seven innings pitched, one earned run. So that's pretty good. We're not going to face them in the wild card, though. Let's see. Oakland, a team we could face at any point in the playoffs. He has good numbers against them. His one start, six innings pitched, one earned run. So those are the better teams. Houston tuned him up for 5 runs in one of the earlier outings this season. I can't remember if that was in Houston or when they came to Fenway, but in his only start, he did get roughed up. And then he also got roughed up against the Chicago White Sox. 6 1/3, gave up 4 earned runs. So they'll be playing matchups, I think, as far as what teams they're facing or whatever. You know, Sale could be the game one starter. Possibly even Eduardo Rodriguez. And the thing, I think I did mention it on the last episode. I think I did anyway. If we're in a dogfight with Tampa going into that final week, we're not going to have the luxury of anything. If Chris Sale's turn to come up is game 161, and that's a critical game, guess what? He's pitching game 161. If Voldy's up game 162 and we have to win it, then he's pitching that game. So whether we win the division, well, if we win the division, we'll probably have the luxury of setting the rotation almost any way we want, because there's a 3 or 4 day break while the wild cards get underway. But if we get relegated to the wild card, then all luxuries are out the window at that point. So we'll see, I guess. And I don't know if we could get edged out by Oakland and maybe we're competing for the second wild card, in which case we might have to go all the way to Oakland, which we took 2 out of 3 out there, but typically we don't play out there. But nonetheless, Nathan Eovaldi looking better and better with each start. Like you said, Jason, 82 strikes out of 100 pitches. I don't know. That's got to be the most of any starter this year, other than maybe DeGrom. But he ends up injured anyway. So, Charlie, your stud for the series.
The stud that I had for this one was Kike Hernandez. I felt like Kike has continuously just not only raised his batting average, like from the beginning of the first Yankee series, his batting average was in mid-July, 234. He's already raised it 10 average points, so 0.0, so what, a hundredth of a point, from 234 to 244. But in that series that we just witnessed him play in, he's still doing work. I mean, he went 5 for 16. He had the most clutch hit that he could have had in the first game. Didn't really do too much up until that one. And I mean, that 2-run double that sealed the deal. You knew that one was coming around, and who was on first base? Jaron Duran, lightning in a bottle. He was scoring on that too. And it was just unreal. Like one thing after another, it was just the perfect storm. And then for the rest of the series, continued to do work. So he's still, even after that first game, went 4 for 12, still knocked in a run, scored runs, not striking out a lot, which is really, really good. For me, it was just a no-brainer. He's kind of solidified himself as maybe not the only leadoff, the sole leadoff hitter, but one of the leadoff hitters that Alex Cora has gone to trust. And if we can continuously see this level of production, I wouldn't be surprised to see him hit 25 home runs and maybe 60 RBIs in the leadoff spot. Not bad.
Yeah, I've said it before about Kike. He's a tone setter. He's a spark plug for your offense. So when he's going, the rest of the offense goes too. And you saw it on Saturday night with that triple that he turned into sort of an inside the park home run that he didn't get credit for because there was an error. But still, he kind of forced that play. He forced a bad throw from center field and scored the run right away. And that kind of set the tone for Saturday night. He's an energy guy, and that's, you know, that role can't be downplayed. Like, yeah, he's not going to have the best batting average. He's not going to, you know, lead any statistical categories, but he's just kind of that guy that you need, especially heading into the postseason. He's got postseason experience playing with the Dodgers all those years. Like, I think that's really valuable. I think having a veteran like him who's been there, done that, he knows what it takes in terms of like the grind to get to the playoffs, to get, you know, through a long playoff series, if that's what it comes down to get to the World Series. That's what Kike is familiar with. He's done that pretty much his whole career. So if he can continue to be a spark plug, and, you know, look, there will be times where we'll be really frustrated with him because he'll go 0-for-8 sometimes or 0-for-12 in a series, and he just won't produce offensively. He's not consistent. That's true. But what is consistent is the energy he brings, the motivation he brings, the clubhouse presence is always there. He's just a guy that this team rallies around, and it's sort of an intangible thing, and I get why fans have a hard time latching on to that. I get why fans can get frustrated with that, but that is very important. For a team like this that is exceeding expectations, who's probably going to the playoffs unless something catastrophic happens, you want a guy like Kike Hernandez on your playoff roster because he knows how to get it done in those clutch moments. And he was clutch this weekend. When it came down to it, he was clutch. The only game you can really get on him for was, what, Saturday night when he struck out against Chapman? I mean, what are you going to do? You know, like, Aroldis Chapman can still deliver it sometimes. So that was, like, maybe the one minor disappointing moment of his weekend. Other than that, he was great. He was a catalyst, and this team's going to need him going forward. So love watching Kike play, and I've been critical of him at times. I feel like rightfully so, maybe at times unfairly so. It goes both ways, but I want to see more playing time for him. And as his team goes on and as they try to contend to win the division, he's going to be really important for sure.
In game one, it was a very low scoring game. Tanner Houck was on, Jordan Montgomery was on, not a lot of runs got scored. We were down 1-0 in the seventh inning. And with the bases loaded, he hit a sack fly out to middle center, and Verdugo was able to tag up, score, tie the game. And the one thing I've noticed throughout the weekend, by the way, none of those Yankees outfielders have arms. They, like Red Sox, any of our outfielders would have gunned down any runners from those spots in the outfield where those Yankees players needed to make those plays. And Greg Allen doesn't have an arm, Floreal. So we kind of reaped the rewards there, but Kike got Verdugo home. And then the ninth inning was where Charlie said he was super clutch. Two outs. Red Sox were down again at that point. Yankees had put up a couple more runs earlier. We'll get to that shortly. But down by two outs. If Kike doesn't make a play here, we lose the game. And he hit a line drive to left center, kind of bounced off the bottom of the monster, and like Charlie said, Verdugo scored from second. Seeing the speed of Jaron Duran, who came in to pinch run in that spot, scored from first base, and that tied it up, 3-3. And the Red Sox went on to win that game. Then today, game four was part of that big eighth inning rally. There were runners on first and second, and Kike was able to kind of pull the ball down the left field line, and Vasquez scored from second, and it moved the runners over to second and third. So no out. So Kike got into second there, and I think it was Cordero at third base. Yeah, it was. And then Pulecki was able to drive him in. Kike moved to second, and then Kike ended up scoring on a Xander sack fly, and that was the go-ahead run. So, absolute killer series by Kike. Again, I don't love him in the leadoff spot, but he's helping the team win in a lot of ways. He's done it defensively a lot, although he has been playing mostly in the infield now with Duran being called up. But I like it, and the thing I don't think we had seen from him prior to recently was late inning heroics, and you're starting to see it now. So easily the best impactful player out of the lineup this series. Now, those were the studs. Getting into honorable mentions now, there was a hero for this series. And to me, that was Phillips Valdez. Phillips Valdez. E-Rod, unfortunately, had some migraine issues that seemed to come up as the game was starting and only lasted one inning. And I was looking forward to E-Rod pitching because it was against Garrett Cole. And now I'm like, great, great. E-Rod's out. We're so screwed. We are so screwed. And oh crap, here comes Phillips Valdez. We're definitely screwed. And he had just been called up either that day or the day before because Salamora went onto the injured list. And then Valdez just put that team on his back. He pitched three full innings, struck out 7 of the 11 batters he faced over those 3 innings, allowed just 1 hit, gave up 1 walk, no runs, and got them basically, you know, through 4 innings and continued to give us a shot. So were you guys surprised?
I was definitely surprised, and I was in a panic, much like many Red Sox fans were when Rodriguez kind of had to come out of that game, because I thought, you know what, it's typical. Like, all week, I feel like sports radio in Boston was talking about, wow, how lucky are the Red Sox? They've had no injuries to their starting pitching. Isn't that amazing? Like, knock on wood, it's probably not going to last. And then all of a sudden, we see Eduardo Rodriguez, hands on his knees, calling for the trainer, being like, I can't do this anymore. I'm like, oh, here we go. Now, it's just migraines, so that's the kind of thing that he should make his next start. Fine, no problem. But for Phillips Valdez to come in, like, and I think this was Valdez basically saying, you know what, I know what the score is. Not the score in the game, but he knows the score of, like, the situation with the Red Sox bullpen. He's looking at guys like Yaxel Rios getting innings and, you know, Brandon Workman, who at first was kind of a reclamation, I can't believe we got him back kind of project. Now he's kind of revert back to what he was. Doesn't seem like he has anything left. Valdez is looking at that bullpen going, I have an opportunity here. I have an opportunity to play my way back into this bullpen where I belong. And he went in there and just, he pitched great. I mean, just was lights out, looked confident, looked like he really wanted to be there. And look, I'll take Phillips Valdez just kind of with an axe to grind, with a chip on his shoulder, pitching his way back into that bullpen any day of the week. I, you know, get Rios out of here, get Workman out of here. I'm all set with those guys. Put Valdez back in, because you know what? Honestly, and this isn't just recency bias, I've kind of always felt this way, I trust him more than those two guys. So if Valdez is back and one of those guys has to go, no problem. I'm good with it.
Yeah, like I said earlier, man, Valdez came in after E-Rod. Ready, Jason? Threw up on his shoes. Yeah, who loves you, baby? And struck out the first one, hit the next guy, and I was like, oh, shit, here we go. It's going to – all right, they'll win the next 3 if they're going to blow the first one. And or the one the next 2 if they blow this one. And he then – proceeded to strike out the next 2 after that. I was like, oh, well, okay. So now we got 2 outs and, you know, runner in scoring position. Oh, you got the next one out. Oh, okay, cool. Okay, so somebody's a little upset and just continued to truck. I mean, you almost felt bad taking him out. Like, I wonder, like, how much longer he could handle this. But at the same time, you want to preserve him. You don't want to injure him, especially at the time. There was no point to having him go more than what he actually did. And what he did was more than enough. I'm incredibly thankful, because if anybody thought that Phillips Valdez was going to get 7 strikeouts in 3 innings, you'd be losing your money. There's no way. No one in their right mind would have thought that. I think the only person that anyone thought could have gone 3 and get 7 punchouts would have been Garrett Whitlock. They had never tested Phillips Valdez like that before. And I mean, he hasn't been up all that long. You know, this is one of the guys that gets sent down for a significant amount of time, and then we don't see him for a while. And then he comes back, gets a little annoyed, pissed off, and does what he just did. So I completely agree with the MVP. I think that was one of the more underrated play calls. As far as like us not having, since we only have two, you know, studs, he and Hauk had to have been up there for other options. I wanted to give Kike his due props after what he did.
Yeah, and Valdez is a fastball changeup guy, and he was able to just kind of get them out and keep them off balance. And I thought Cora might have gone to the well one times too many by sending him out for that third inning, but he was still fantastic. And I don't think Gerrit Cole, when he got out of bed that morning, thought he was going to basically get out-dueled by Phillips Valdez, because Cole was out of there one inning later due to a 40-pitch inning in, I think, the third inning. And the next honorable mention, Rafael Devers, hit a two-run shot off of Gerrit Cole in the fifth inning. And like Kike, Devers did it with two outs. Devers, it seems like he does all of his damage with two outs. It's just unbelievable how clutch this guy is. And he hits that home run that was in the fifth inning. And we were tied 1-1. And that home run, it was a two-run shot, made it 3-1. And then a couple of innings later, again, two outs. That's when he does it. Hits a three-run shot off of Nestor Cortez to make the score 6-1. Essentially put the game out of reach. So Devers continues to, you know, be the engine behind our offense. Xander's taken most of the month of July off, and another guy we're going to talk about has been up and down, but Devers has been consistent with every series, and he's taken the least amount of games off, and love what I'm seeing there. The other final honorable mention, Tanner Houck, was just absolutely lights out in that game one performance. Nasty, unhittable slider. I called him Chris Sale Jr. coming into the start on Twitter. Similar arm slot. Slider's every bit as nasty, and he's got his fastball. He did mix in a sinker a little bit and threw, I think, three splitters, which is still kind of a work in progress, but still definitely does need to get a third pitch that he can throw 10 to 15% of the time. And hopefully they're working on that. He's had elbow issues earlier in the year, so he's kind of getting stretched out right now. He pitched, I think, around 85 pitches or so. So had the rain not come, he would have probably got that final out. Nesson was saying he might come back out for the sixth, but I don't think Cora would have done that. But any thoughts on Devers or Houck?
I would like to ask, does anyone still want Nelson Cruz? Red Sox fans, you guys still butthurt about Nelson Cruz? Because they worked it out that the equivalent would have been you'd have to give up Tanner Houck. So did you guys want that? You want to give up Tanner Houck for Nelson Cruz?
No.
Now, I get it. Like, yeah, and I know that we don't, like, and, you know, because we're smart. But all I heard from Red Sox fans was all the caterwauling about, oh, you could have gotten Nelson Cruz. That's a deal you should have done. How stupid are the Red Sox? They're not stupid. Nelson Cruz is a 40-plus-year-old DH who can't play the field. He has no fit here. Good for the Rays. They went and got him because they're desperate. That's what a desperate team does. They go out and get a DH who can hit home runs. Woohoo! Yay! They're still not winning the division. So did you want to give up Tanner Houck for that? I hope not. If you're a smart Red Sox fan, you should say, no, I don't want Nelson Cruz because I want Tanner Houck in my rotation next year. Houck looks great. I still want a third pitch. I know that all the Red Sox nerds say, well, he could just be the next two-pitch sensation in baseball. No, no, it's probably not going to work. He's going to need a third, but that's okay. Right now, his two pitches are elite. Like, they're really good. So, great. Work on the third pitch. Work his way into the rotation. I'm good with that. I'm thrilled with Hauk. I'm excited that he's going to be in the rotation next year. And I'm so glad that he's still here. Because the idea of trading him away for anyone like a Nelson Cruz just never sat right with me. I'm glad that the Red Sox were smart. They hung on to him. He looks great. He looks ready to go.
I'm more afraid of Tampa than you are, apparently. But who just?
Oh, I'm not. Yeah, they don't worry me at all. I'm not scared.
Really? Nope. Okay.
Nope.
They just dealt Rich Hill to the Mets. Even they're like, here, take our best pitcher. And
yeah, I don't think they're as smart as everyone else thinks they are. So maybe that's just me. I don't know. I'm not scared of them. I think that they are a little too confident in their own organizational depth. And I think trading for Nelson Cruz and calling up Wander Franco and then trading for Nelson Cruz is absolutely desperation at its finest. So, I'm not worried about them. I'm really not.
So I actually also am worried about, the Tampa Bay Rays just because of what they've been able to do to us so far. Do I think they're the best team in the American League East? Even after moves, I think it's starting to come out that the Red Sox are making a case and they at least deserve your attention. But Tanner Houck, in three of his four appearances, granted he hasn't started each game, has only allowed two earned runs total as a starter. His ERA is down to 2.5. He's still 0-1, and he has a 2.5 ERA. He's averaging over a strikeout per inning. He's only given up one home run. God, it's crazy. It's crazy to me. This is someone to keep your eyes on, and Devers has been my stud basically weekly. Like every single, I feel like I pick him probably 7 times out of 10. As soon as he mashed the second one, I'm like, oh, here's my stud again, but I'm going to challenge myself to pick somebody else different. They're on it right now. They're doing great.
Just for the heck of it, I was looking at Tampa's depth chart, and they currently have Ryan Yarbrough number one, and he has been pitching pretty well. That Shane McClanahan kid number two, and then it kind of falls off after that. Well, Josh Fleming got off to a good start. He'd be their number three, but he's been tuned up a little bit recently. And Tyler Glass now, there's no timetable on him, but they do expect him to come back. So I think that would be if they happen to get past the wild card. But they seem to have a lot of confidence in their pitching either way. So, all right, let's get over to the duds side of things. Jason, who's your dud for the series?
Yeah, Adam Ottavino, not a great weekend for him. Ending in a third, 4 runs, 4 hits, 2 walks. This is a guy that I'm not ready to like jettison him off the team anytime soon. I still think that he can be a good reliever, but I think this guy's a mental case. I really do. Now there were quotes that came out after that game Saturday night. I don't know if they were real or not, but it was about him facing the Yankees and how he grew up a Yankee fan. And it's tough to see those uniforms, and it kind of breaks my heart going up against them. Again, not confirmed if those were real quotes or not, but either way, the guy seems just kind of like a mental case. Like, I think going forward, do I want Ottavino in the bullpen? Absolutely, I do. Yes. Do I want him in high leverage, close situations? I'm not sure about that. I'm really not. I feel like he's the kind of guy with his kind of stuff, with that sweeping slider and the you know, all of that. Like, he's either got it or he doesn't. And if he doesn't have it, then Cora needs to be mindful of the 3-batter minimum, and he needs to get him out of there after the third batter. If by the third batter, Ottavino doesn't have an out or he's got runners on base and he's struggling, Cora needs to yank him. Like, that's it. You can't sit there and go, no, he'll figure it out, because you know what? He's too much of a mental case. He doesn't have the mental fortitude, at least in my opinion, to get it back on track, to figure it out, to kind of take a breath, get the train back on tracks. Like, once the wheels start going, he gets derailed. And Cora needs to be mindful of that, especially going forward, especially in important games. Like, if Ottavino's in there and he starts to struggle and he's walking the ballpark again, after those three batters are up, you get him out of there. That's it. Like, I just honestly, as many home runs as he's given up, and I know he's on the IL right now, but I would trust Sawamura over Ottavino in a high leverage situation right now, because I just think Ottavino is a little bit of a mental case. So, like I said, I, you know, still want him in the bullpen because I still think when he's on, he's nasty, but it's just one of those things where it's kind of a roll of dice at this point. He's either on and he'll give you a really good inning and you'll feel good about it, or he's off and you're kind of sitting there going, oh boy, how quickly can we get this guy out? Because he's going to walk the ballpark if it's up to him.
So this is my response to that, because I think I agree the most with out of the group. I think I agree the most with Terry and you, with thoughts, opinions, and everything. I'm going to disagree with you here, and this is the reason why. Going into this series, Adam Ottavino has allowed two runs or more. The answer is just two runs in just two games all season. He's been one of the more consistent pitchers that we've had in the bullpen. He's also the only Red Sox reliever that has not succumbed to the home run ball. He hasn't given up a major bomber to the baby bombers. It just hasn't happened. And walking into the series, 4 1/3 innings, a walk, 3 strikeouts, one hit allowed, or one run, excuse me, on two hits, including a save and a hold. I would like to call this just an ugly anomaly. I'm sure there are plenty of players out there in Major League Baseball that have to face the team that they grew up loving and worshiping and wishing that they could play for. And I think that is completely out of context, because this is also the team he's facing that basically said, yeah, you're not worth it. We don't want you anymore. So I think that has a higher probability of being something that drives him. And he may have just been a little bit annoyed. I don't think this is going to be how he carries himself moving forward. The four runs that he allowed in this series ballooned his ERA for the month up to over 6. Do I think that's how it's going to be for the rest of the month? No, if he gets maybe one or two more appearances in, he shouldn't be pitching for a couple days anyways. But I think he's been one of our more consistent weapons, and I do trust him. He has 16 holds this year. I can't say that I don't trust someone who has 16 holds who carried a 2.5 ERA going into this series. He and Matt Barnes matched at 2.54. I just can't get behind it. I completely understand why he was a dud for you, and he was a dud for me too. But I think it's just another one of those, I think we just have to chalk it up to bad series.
I'm not overly concerned long term. If a team was going to figure him out and be hell-bent on trying to figure him out, it's Adam Ottavino, because they don't want to get beat by their own guy in a way. So that's one thing. On the other hand here, he is 35 years old. He's been ridden like a rented mule all year. The eighth inning has been his almost exclusively. When Barnes hasn't been available, he has pitched some ninth innings. So maybe a little bit of a breather could benefit him a little bit. If Alex Cora wants to reshuffle things, I don't see why Josh Taylor can't pitch some eighth innings if need be. Salamora's bicep strain doesn't seem to be too concerning, I don't think, because he was throwing a bullpen session today, which was seen by the Nesson cameras. So I think his timetable and return is fairly imminent. If it's not going to be the minimum 10 days, it won't be much longer than that. Admittedly, I'm not great with our bullpen depth on the farm, but I do know there are some guys down in AAA that could come up and pitch some innings. So I'm not overly concerned, but the Yankees definitely did tune him up, and we've got a couple series left. One of his other bad outings, ironically, in July was against the Toronto Blue Jays, who we are about to face for four games. So I don't think we can hide him for four games, but we'll see. It will be encouraging, though, if he does have some good outings. But I think at 35 years old, I think Cora should maybe use him a little bit more sparingly at this point. And I think that's best for everyone. Any final thoughts before we move on?
No, I think that's a fair point that, you know, he's had a lot of wear and tear. He's been pitching for a long time. So maybe it is time for Cora to utilize some other bullpen options in the eighth inning. Maybe give Ottavino an extra day off. I mean, hell, if Xander Bogaerts gets extra days off, I don't see why Adam Ottavino can't. So why not?
Absolutely. Charlie, go ahead. Your dud for the series.
So my dud for this one was JD Martinez. 2-for-15 with a single, a double, a walk, 4 strikeouts, no runs knocked in, no home runs. You have to go back to the Atlanta series for the last series where he had no RBIs and no homers and RBIs. And the last time that he had no homers and RBIs in a four-game series was literally the one right before that. He went 6 straight games without a homer or an RBI. He still managed to get on base each game. This series, not so much. So still struggled a little bit to get some work done. Wasn't able to get on base in each game. And for your power hitter, I again would like to just call this like a little bit of an anomaly. The Yankees are a good team. The kicker is that in his last New York series, he did go 2-for-10 with just the solo home run as far as the major hit is concerned. I don't want to spend too much time on it because I just think it's just a little bit of a tough series. That's all.
Yeah, I think it's a minor blip on the radar. You know, he left 4 guys on base all weekend, so that's not a terrible number. But when you look at the weekend, a lot of close scores. So particularly the game you lost 4-3, you lost by a run. He left 2 guys on base in that game. So some missed opportunities there for JD. But you know what? At the end of the day, I agree with Charlie. It's, you know, one bad series. It's not anything to panic about. JD's been pretty much really good all year. Can't really ask for much more from him. So tough series, you know, luckily you won three out of four. So it kind of goes under the rug. You don't really, you know, pay much attention to it. So I'm sure he'll bounce back, but yeah, he could have done a little bit more for sure.
He's actually 7-for-35 in the last three series. So not the most productive stretch for him. He also didn't have a walk in this series, so not sure if something's going on, but this is a walk year for him, so hopefully he will get it figured out before long, but there's no reason to believe he won't. Some dishonorables to get into. Really only one. Brandon Workman had 2 appearances. Gave up an earned run in each of those appearances. And didn't record a strikeout either. So I'm just kind of wondering. I kind of figured Rios would be the next man out, but I'm starting to wonder if it could be Workman. Rios had a pretty good series. He pitched 2 scoreless innings in game 2. And then I thought he had one more. I guess not. So 2 scoreless innings in game 2. And then today he was only in for a third of an inning and walked 2 people, which led to Josh Taylor coming in. And Taylor held the runners, and no one scored. So not the worst outing for Rios. But at this point, the pressure's on Workman because he could be the weakest link in that bullpen.
Yeah, I think the clock's running out on Workman. And you know what? He was kind of, again, kind of like Pivetta in a way. Like, I know that you traded him for Pivetta, and then you sort of, by a roundabout way, ended up with him again. So he was sort of like found money on the street, at least when he first came back here. But he looks cooked. He just looks totally cooked. His velocity's down. He doesn't have the same bite to his pitches anymore. And I think, you know, with Sawamura due to come back at some point, I do think the Red Sox will add a bullpen arm at the deadline. I think it's either him or Rios. And I think at this point, Rios at least has something that you can work with. He's got stuff. He's got velocity. He's a little bit younger than Workman as well. I think that they'll progress with him and they'll let Workman go because, yeah, he just looks like he has nothing left.
Charlie, thoughts?
I think the Workman experiment has unfortunately come to a close. Thank you for your time. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like you haven't done your work in Boston in the past, but it was an experiment. We tried to see if it would work. It doesn't appear that it worked this time. But, you know, we thank him for his service. He was incredibly vital. He provided a bit of a return on the trade, recognized his role and his place, was willing to come back and give it a shot, and maybe a team will be willing to give more of a chance to him. But I think that curveball, while it's exciting and whatnot, is just people are sitting on it. They're waiting on it. And if he can't locate that pitch, I mean, it's not good. So, you know, B-Dubs, thank you. We appreciate you, man. Best of luck to you.
Well, all right, let's get into the next series. It's a critical one against the Toronto Blue Jays, and I say that because they have the offense to tune up literally any of our pitching. So we'll kind of get into that right now. I'm not familiar with the game one starter the Blue Jays are trotting out there, Thomas Hatch. He has a low ERA, but I can't tell if he's been utilized as a starter or has been mostly pitching out of the bullpen. That was a TBD start until he was slotted in there today. He will face Nick Pivetta in game one. Pivetta's been up and down. He's seen a lot of Toronto, which makes me nervous at this point. Eventually, they're going to kind of catch up to him, you would think, and could get tuned up. So what do you guys think of game one?
I'm going to just go ahead and say this is going to be a dub. This guy hasn't pitched more than two innings at all this year, except for one game, I believe, at the beginning of the year. Make that two, excuse me. Two and a third, two and two thirds. Since then, hasn't pitched more than two. He's kind of like a very poor man's Garrett Whitlock. I don't see that. And you're facing Nick Pivetta, and I'm just not going to disrespect Naughty Nick over here. He's just getting it done. I say the Red Sox win the first game handedly.
Yeah, Hatch has some decent minor league numbers, but he's not a standout. He's not a, you know, he's a 26-year-old, kind of took a long time to get up to the majors. If Pivetta's on, then he should be good. I think the Red Sox should win this game because I think their offense is too good. Again, they're not going up against a top prospect here. It's a 26-year-old who's had a couple of good minor league starts. He's had some success up in the majors so far, but he's running into a dangerous offense. Red Sox should outscore them at least, and they should win.
I just want to see a solid pitching performance from Pivetta and see him get settled back into a groove. Game two, Garrett Richards versus Robbie Ray. Ray has been pitching very well, especially against us. This will be Richards' fifth start against the Blue Jays. And three out of his previous four, he gave up exactly four earned runs. The one anomaly in there was just a two-run outing. So, like Pivetta, I'm a little bit worried here. Maybe they've seen Richards a lot and they just saw him a week or so ago. I'm just hoping he finds a way to win, and he does typically find a way to win or help us, you know, be competitive. Go ahead, Charlie.
So it's adorable that we're doing that, but it's Garrett effing Richards, guys. I mean, I'm sorry. I can't drink the sauce on this kid. Even though it's cute that all of a sudden now he's got something back on the ball. Robbie Ray is the one to watch in this one, because are we going to see June 13th Robbie Ray when he struck out 10 of us in six innings? Or are we going to see July 21st where he struck out four and five innings and took the L? So overall, I still think that Robbie Ray has the ability to get the job done, especially considering I trust Robbie Ray to go more than six innings to get it done. Robbie Ray had five quality starts out of six in June. He's had three out of four so far. Three of his starts have gone six and two-thirds or more, 2-7 innings. And he faced Tampa Bay twice, including a one-hitter. Like, I think the writing is on the wall for this one. It's going to be the Robbie Ray show, and Richards will just be there.
So I think there's only one hope for this game, and that's that Cora benches his two crappy left-handed hitters. And by that, I mean Franchy Cordero and Fred Lynn Jr. out there in center, Jaron Duran. Because apparently the top prospect who is going to be the next, you know, effing Willie Mays can't hit left-handers. So maybe he puts out a good lineup. Maybe, you know, guys like Renfro and JD kind of wake up against a left-hander, because they generally do. But I also have no confidence in Garrett Richards anymore. And if all of you, you know, sorry for being the contrarian a-hole, you know, on Twitter, but if you guys want to yell at me for saying I don't believe in a Red Sox pitcher, then go ahead. But I think Garrett Richards' days are numbered. I think the Red Sox will add a pitcher at the deadline. I think Garrett Richards will find his way out of the rotation. He'll take the Matt Andrees role of being a mop-up guy, because that's all he's good for these days. So I'd like to think he knows he's pitching for his job, but I also think that guy's such a basket case that he's going to know he's pitching for his job, and he's going to psych himself out so much that he's going to crap his pants on the mound. So I think that's going to be a loss for the Red Sox. I think Robbie Ray will just outpitch him, and hopefully, by the grace of God, that will be the last we see of Garrett Richards starting a Red Sox game this year.
Hopefully. Absolutely. So the next matchup in Game 3 on Wednesday, that is Tanner Houck versus Steven Matz. Matz has actually looked good in four out of his last five starts. The one of those five that didn't go well was against the Red Sox. So hopefully we'll tune him up again. I'm really intrigued to see what Tanner Houck can do with arguably the most dangerous lineup in Major League Baseball. And I kind of like the Red Sox in that one, but
yeah. So I'm going to go ahead and continue riding the hot streak. Are we going to again see Steven Matz of June or July? June, he crushed us. June or May. In May, he got spanked. But I refuse to bet against Tanner Houck, who continues to be a stud with little to no run support. And this is where it's going to be tough, because if Houck can't get this one done, I actually only have the Red Sox winning one out of four, because I don't have faith in Garrett Richards. I don't have faith in E-Rod right now. And this is the anomaly game. So I could see them potentially winning just one out of four as my bold prediction if Houck gets rocked. Two is the most I think they'll get. It just remains to be determined, like, how is Matt's going to respond, and can Houck continue to be as dominant as he was?
Yeah, I like the Red Sox in this one. Again, two of your worst hitters, Duran and Cordero, probably won't play in this game because left-hander, so have to protect them against him. And Houck is going up against kind of a right-handed heavy lineup. As good as Toronto is, it's Vlad, Bichette, it's Teoscar. Like, it's a lot of right-handed bats. That's what he excels against. It's not a lefty strong lineup. So I like Houck against that lineup. I don't think Steven Matz is any great shakes. I think the Red Sox have figured him out. So I think they'll put out a good lineup there. They'll score a lot of runs. And I think Houck will pitch pretty well. So yeah, I think the Red Sox will do well in that one. They'll win.
The fourth and final game of the series is Eduardo Rodriguez versus Hyunjin Ryu. I'm not particularly worried too much about E-Rod. If it was a migraine, okay. At this point, we're getting kind of a well-rested Eduardo Rodriguez. He's only faced Toronto twice this year. Once was in April when he was cruising through that entire month. He pitched six innings, gave up only two earned runs. Then he faced them again in the middle of May, only lasted five innings, gave up five earned runs. But that was during the stretch where he was absolutely terrible. So they're going to be seeing a better, sharper version of him this time based on his last few starts anyway, where he was mixing his pitches and commanding everything very well. He is facing Ryu, who is their ace outside of the reemergence of Robbie Ray. But I like E-Rod in that one. I think he's going to pitch well. I mean, will we win it? That's tough to say because the bullpen has to come in after him, and that's an explosive lineup. But I think he's going to give us a good shot to win.
So with E-Rod, I'm still a little bit concerned. Ryu has owned us and got kind of owned. I still think that I'm kind of leaning Toronto on this one. And the reason for that being is E-Rod loves to throw a lot of pitches. And he's the type of guy who throws 100 pitches after four plus innings. And if you got guys in that lineup that can work counts, especially since they have a heavy artillery lineup with big guns, big bats, I actually can see E-Rod seeing a quick exit and possibly not even lasting four innings. And that's assuming you got Vladdy working counts, Springer's back, Semien does work. Thank God Rowdy Tellez isn't there. I've been saying that. Dumbest name in baseball. But I'm so happy he's not in that lineup. And it just keeps on going and going. There's, you know, the kids. You have Bichette. You have Biggio. I don't want to face that lineup, especially with E-Rod. I almost feel like even though he's doing better, he's still fragile. So I actually have this one going to Toronto. That's me.
Yeah, I have the Red Sox in this one. I think E-Rod will bounce back. I think the migraine game was kind of a blip. It was just, you know, as someone who suffers from migraines myself, I know how those go. It's random. It's, you know, they suck, but it happens. Rodriguez has been good lately. He's been kind of on a tear. So, and I think Hyunjin Ryu, he's had a good year, but the one number with him that sticks out to me is the home runs. He's on pace to give up a career high in home runs. I think his highest was 22. He's already given up 14 this year. And I think the Red Sox get to him. Now, you know, that's going to be JD. That's going to be Hunter Renfro, maybe even Rafael Devers. Xander Bogaerts, to me, he's concerning me with his wrist. I don't think he's got the power swing right now. But I could see the Red Sox jumping on him. And, you know, they've seen him enough times. They know what to expect. And if he's giving up more home runs, that means that his stuff is a little less sharp than it has been in years past. So I think they'll jump on him early. I think they'll give Rodriguez an early lead. And I think Rodriguez is determined to kind of bounce back and show, hey, it's, you know, I'm good. I'm ready to go. Again, he sees the tea leaves too. Everyone's talking about Chris Sale. Everyone's talking about the trade deadline. He knows that he has to prove himself in this rotation too. So unlike Garrett Richards, I think Rodriguez has the balls to actually go out there and prove it. So I think he'll pitch well, and I think the Red Sox will win that game. They'll win 3 out of 4.
Rowdy Tellez, if anyone's curious, got traded to the Milwaukee Brewers and in 11 games is hitting .350 with a .462 on base percentage and an OPS north of 1100. So he has found a home there in Milwaukee for now, at least. There's no DH, so I'm guessing he's playing first base, but I was a little surprised to see that. I'm going to say 2-for-2 in this series, two games to two. The one thing we also have to consider here is their first series back in the Rogers Center, so maybe they'll be feeling the energy of the crowd. you know, Canada took them a long time to loosen up those restrictions. So I'm glad we're not playing in Buffalo. I thought that series was dumb. It was a launch pad. That was not baseball. So anyway, so we will wrap with that 24 hours after this episode is uploaded. The next edition of Hot Take Tuesday will be available. Going to be some interesting talk in there. We're gonna talk some Rafael Devers extension talk, and I've got some scenarios to kind of compare this to. So I think that's going to be a fun episode. So tune in for that. Everyone have a good start to your week. Take care.